How did you approach your own time management at the beginning?
Terribly.
Well, honesty is the best policy.
Hey, my name is Jenna Kutcher, and I am obsessed with all things business, marketing, numbers, and helping you to navigate both the messy and the magical seasons of this thing called life. I'm a small town mama who took a $300 camera, grew a successful photo biz, and now I work from home and run a seven-figure online business. I teach you the tried and true secrets to building a career you adore. Shy away from the real talk? No way. Money, hardship, growth, loss, and marketing are all topics we discuss here. Think of this as your one-stop shop for happy hour with a gal pal mixed with business school. Pull up a seat, make sure you're cozy, and get ready to be challenged and encouraged while you learn. This is the Gold Digger Podcast. This is so exciting. My friend Amy Porterfield and her podcast, Online Marketing Made Easy, are officially on the HubSpot Podcast Network. If you've been around the Gold Digger Podcast for a while, you know that Amy is one of the reasons why I launched my own show. Well, now we're BFFs and the rest is podcasting history. With a focus on online business, including digital courses, list building, social media, and webinars, Online Marketing Made Easy breaks down big ideas and strategies into actionable step-by-step processes. And the show's designed to get you more results with a whole lot less stress. If you like Gold Digger, I can pretty much guarantee that you're going to love Amy's show too. She digs into topics like 7 email copywriting tips to convert subscribers and what happens when a launch doesn't go as planned and so much more. Listen to Online Marketing Made Easy wherever you get your podcasts. Well, Kylie, I am so excited to talk about something slightly challenging today.
Really setting up the topic for us. Can you, first of all, can you believe that we've been doing these Kylie and Jenna episodes, I think, for like a year now?
It's right? So fun. And I genuinely just look forward to them. One, because you and I get to connect. But I think it's so fun to have conversations. And a lot of times when you host your own show, which, you know, it's like you're just talking into your own computer. So this yes. is like so fun. So yeah. Today we get to talk about something that's not so fun. But I think you and I will make it fun because that's what we do.
Yeah, I can't wait to play a little game of like, what would Jenna do in these scenarios? You know, it's a new year, 2022, all these opportunities in front of us. Maybe you, dear listener, are thinking of launching your business. And Jenna, I think you can probably relate to this from your entrepreneurial perspective, but we're kind of planners and like,
yes,
we want to plan what our year is going to look like, what we might be accomplishing, the projects we want to take on. But there's one thing you really can't plan for. It's like those challenging business scenarios that come up out of the blue, ready to knock you off your horse. And then you have to find your footing again. So that's what we're talking about today, is those business scenarios that can be challenging. And then what would Jenna do in those scenarios with all of your over a decade of entrepreneurial experience?
You know, what's wild is I think I have PTSD around some of these topics.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So it's going to be fun to dive into some of those stories of those early days. And it just reminds me of like all the blueprints, all the things that you can study, all of the step-by-step processes that you can adopt don't normally plan for certain scenarios or don't walk you through specific scenarios. And that's where you really feel isolated and on your own. You feel that like solo of solopreneur when you go through these things. And so what do you think? Should we dive in?
Yeah, let's do it. And I want to start with a big one, because when I think of your past life as a wedding photographer, and my little sister is now in that industry now, she's a wedding photographer. The thing that freaks me out the most of that service provider role is you have like one shot to get it right. Like you don't get, it's not like recording a podcast or you can just like roll it back and re-say something. You have someone's like most special, precious day. So what happens in that service provider role when maybe you let them down or you miss a deadline or you don't meet their expectations in some way? Like how do you even approach the challenging scenario of letting down a customer or client?
Well, I still have actual nightmares around wedding photography because of what you just said. You get one chance. I have literally had this dream happen over and over and over again in my life where I show up to a wedding and I have no batteries, or I show up to a wedding and I have one memory card and I have to like only fill that memory card. I had one dream where I showed up to a wedding and I had a crate full of puppies and the puppies were like running down the aisle and I was trying to corral the puppies and like shoot photos. Like, I don't know what it is about that, but I think what's so crazy about being in the service-based industry is that your job is literally to anticipate the next need before someone asks for it. Ooh. And it's like you're always trying to be like one step ahead, and that can be really exhausting to do for a long amount of time, but also in like high-stakes situations like wedding photography. So when you let somebody down, the first thing that I've learned, and let me tell you, I still struggle with this even to this day, but it's something that I've really tried to work on, is first, it's not about you and your defensiveness. I think that a lot of times when people choose to hire a service provider, they're hoping that that service provider has their best interest, is going to do their best job for them. And I would say most of the time we show up with those, you know, goals in mind. But I think a lot of times when we care so deeply about our work, or when we're so passionate about what we do, our first level of response is being reactionary and defensive. And I can remember a story about a particular couple who I worked with, and I love them. I actually still talk to them to this day. And I shot their engagement photos, and afterwards I like sent her the sneak peeks and they were gorgeous. They were so gorgeous. And she hated them. And she hated how her makeup and hair looked. So it wasn't necessarily about the photo, but it was the final product. Mm-hmm. And I remember just being like, is she blind? She is so freaking gorgeous. Like, I don't understand. And I remember just being frustrated because I was like, you know, I did my part of the job, but how do we like work through this together, knowing too that like our relationship is extended past an engagement session. And so we worked together, and I was really proud of myself because it was one of the first times in my career that I stood my ground in the sense of saying, if it's the photos you don't like, this is really what my work looks like. And if this isn't the right fit, I want to give you an easy way out and connect you with someone who is the right fit. Because I worried then, like, how is this going to trickle into the wedding day if she's not happy then? I don't want to set myself up for failure or show up so nervous. And so that was the first time in my career where I really was like giving a client this opportunity to change their mind and this invitation to, because if it wasn't the right fit in the first place, then why would we continue on? And once I gave her that decision, then she started to understand and was like, no, I really want to work with you. Like, it's not the photos, it's my hair and makeup. But having that conversation where expectations were set was huge. And I think that you and I were just talking, when expectations aren't set in any relationship, it leaves so much room to be disappointed or frustrated or feel like you're getting forgotten or, you know, under communicated with. And so I think that so much of it is about expectations. And so if you fail to set them in the first place, here's your opportunity to learn moving forward how you can set them from the first time you say hello to a potential customer all the way through the experience, but then really over communicate with that client what their options are, how you can remedy the situation. And the number one thing to do is repeat back their concerns, proving to them that you actually listened and heard them.
That's really good. I'm not sure I've ever heard you give that piece of advice to give a client, give a customer a way out. And I'm just thinking from my perspective, if I was that service provider, if I was in your shoes, the anxiety I would have felt if that door wasn't there for her to walk through.
Yes.
I wouldn't want to carry on that relationship if she truly wasn't happy. That would have made my job harder. I would have dreaded going to the next step with that client. So, wow, that's really good.
It was really cool because I was just very clear and I was like, I think this work, and the work was beautiful. Like, I loved their photos. And so it was like, if you're unhappy, this just might be a sign for us that we weren't the right fit. And I think too, it's like, as people, we crave being able to make decisions, like the freedom to make decisions. So putting that decision back in her court was such a blessing because, one, it really made her feel confirmed that she made the right decision in the first place. But it also gave us this opportunity to say, hey, maybe this isn't the right fit. There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with me. But let's figure out what's going to be the next best step. And I think a lot of times when you're starting out in the service-based industry, you want to please everybody. You want to work with everybody. Anyone that's willing to pay you, you'll like say, you know, send me the check. Mm-hmm. But at some point you're like, no, I want to work with people who really appreciate and understand what I do. And it was just such a good lesson for me that like, it's okay to stand firm, but also to give options. And I would have willingly connected her with another photographer who I thought would have been a good fit if she would have gone that route. And I'm like, man, it's like a win-win all around, you know?
Yeah, that's really good. So I think this kind of leads into the next challenging scenario. It sounds like that was a decision that allowed you to put a boundary in place. If it's not the right fit, you're not going to work together. And boundaries, I think for entrepreneurs, especially at first, when the whole idea is to say yes to income opportunities because you are an entrepreneur and you're providing for yourself and your family, you can blur the lines of those boundaries where you really want to say yes to projects, where you should be, you know, maybe saying no to protect your peace and your time. So how do you approach boundaries today? And how does that contrast with how you were setting boundaries for yourself in the beginning?
Oh, 10 years ago, Jenna would have said, what's a boundary? Now this Jenna is like, boundaries are literally like my greatest life's pillar.
Yes.
So it's interesting. I think that one of the things that happens, and one of the reasons why what you just said rings so true, is like in the early days, you just want to say yes to everything. And I think it's a lot of being not confident in your ability to move forward or to find the right clients or to really cater to a specific audience. I think it's that lack of confidence that makes you agree to things, because I think a lot of times in our brain, we've heard so many stories where an entrepreneur hits their big break or this one job changed everything for them. And it's almost like we're walking through, kind of like if you're single and you meet a cute guy at Starbucks and you're like, this is it. This is my future husband. It's like those meet cute moments that yes. like you're looking for in your own business, which really create this lack of boundaries and cause you to say yes to everything. And one of the biggest things that I found is that in saying yes to everyone else, whether it was clients or different projects or different opportunities, I was ultimately saying no to the things that matter to me, my own business, my own growth, my own relationships, my family. And so work boundaries can be really tricky. And I think too, at the beginning, it's like you're out there to prove to yourself first and foremost that you can actually do this thing, but then to prove to the world. And I think that when you have that idea of this like almost vengeance standpoint, you're prone to make decisions that are kind of hasty and that really don't protect you and your peace. One of the biggest ones that I ended up implementing that has changed my life even to this day is really protecting my phone number. And what I mean by that is when I first started out, specifically in the service-based industry, but even to this day in the digital space, is I handed out my phone number to anyone. And what would happen is that so often people would text me at nights or on the weekend. They'd want to know if they could see a certain photo or if I could quick edit this for their save the dates or things like that. And what I never realized is that pretty soon I was dreading grabbing my phone. It was making my phone this thing that connected me back to work. And if I was in my life, it pulled me back into work. And so I think we've talked about it on the show before, but we have such strict boundaries on our team when it comes to phone use, because I'm like, I don't want my team to hate picking up their phone and thinking that there's a fire they need to put out in the workspace. So I would just say that as you get going, expectations, like what we talked about earlier, are going to help you set those boundaries. So towards the end of my career, as a wedding photographer, I would only give out my phone number the week before the wedding. So I would say, you know, like as we get closer to the event, because on the day of, I wanted them to have my number if we needed to get in touch or if anything moved or changed. And then after the event, I would switch right back to email. And that way it wasn't opening up these lines of communication that were threatening to pull me out of my life. And that was really good. And even to this day, if people ask for my phone number and it's for something for work, I just direct them to the other places where I can respond to them better and faster. And it just protects that boundary, which I think is so important. important because you don't know when you send a text message if somebody's having coffee with their mom or snuggling with their baby or taking a nap. Like, you don't know. And so it's just a really beautiful way to be respectful. And I think it's just something you've got to learn over time.
The only phone calls that come in these days anyway are renewing your auto warranty. So, you know, there's really no need to share a phone number out there. No one's calling anybody anymore, you know?
Oh, amen. Amen.
So one of those work boundaries that I think is most challenging, especially as a, you know, I've been an entrepreneur, but more of a side hustler for a while. And I got stuck in saying yes to income opportunities because you never know when that income is going to slow down, when you might hit a slow season. And that's definitely a challenging business scenario. And maybe if it's your first time jumping into entrepreneurship or your first year full time or whatever that looks like, you may have jumped in full time because you were at a high season and you did have that free flowing income. Things were looking good. The books were booked. But how do you plan for, or if you haven't planned for a slow season, how do you handle it when you're in it?
Yeah. So this was huge for me. And when I look back, I'm like, bravo to 23-year-old Jenna for thinking about this, because wedding photography in the Midwest is wildly seasonal. We're talking 6 months of crazy and then 6 months of nothing.
Yeah.
And being able to leave a corporate salary with confidence that I was going to make it through the winter required a lot of thoughtfulness. And so one of the things that you really want to look at, and this is why I think it is so beautiful, if you are granted the opportunity to do your business as a side hustle, is you can start to recognize trends and seasonality and flow and like what that looks like. And that's why I think it's so beautiful to make the leap, quote unquote, into entrepreneurship more of like an inch by inch journey. I really am grateful that I did that because I was able to kind of understand the climate that I was walking into, but also to be able to prepare. And so one of the things that I did early on that I'm so grateful for, it's like one of the things I did right, was that I looked at, okay, if I book 25 weddings for the first year, I'm going to make around $55,000. How can I basically put myself on a payroll to pay myself the same amount year round so that when that quiet season, when it gets dead, I don't panic and freak out? And when I'm super busy, the money doesn't burn a hole in my pocket and I run out of it. And so from the very beginning, I mean, even when I was 3 years in, I was fortunate enough to be making six figures as a wedding photographer. I was still paying myself a $50,000 salary because I knew I could live off of that. And I knew that we didn't need more. And I wanted to just start building up our savings. And so it was really, for me, I was like, let's live off of less. Let's not let our lifestyle shift until we know that this business can support it, because I just didn't want to move up too fast and then be forced on that treadmill of working super hard just to maintain a lifestyle. And even to this day, what I pay myself is a fraction of what the business brings in, but that allows us to invest in other ways, our team, 401k, savings, investments, things like that. So if you are knowing that your business has seasonality, the best thing I could tell you to do is to work with an accountant and see if you can literally put yourself on a payroll where your savings will help support that payroll when the slow season hits, but it'll also just help you create some sort of consistent money flow in your business year round, because I think that gives you the ability to see those slow times as this invitation to rest or to actually slow down without panicking. It kind of reminds me of like lockdown and quarantine. Like if we would have known, like, here's the start date and the end date, I think people could have relaxed into the new norm a little bit better. But great when point. Uncertainty hits, we panic, right? So yeah, how can you like hedge yourself from that panicked uncertainty? And you can do that through planning. The other thing that I would just say to look at is like, look at your numbers and look at the trends and look at things that you can predict as close to precision as possible. And that can really just help for you to understand, here's what the business can bring in. Here's what I need to do to do that. Here's what I really need to live off of. And I think what was so beautiful about how I navigated that early on was that I was able to kind of rest in the winters and not feel frantic or urgent because of how I created an income that was annual year round, even when I wasn't shooting. And that gave me just a little bit more balance than I think a lot of people can have.
We have an entire episode of Gold Digger at jennakutcherblog.com/boost sales. And that has more advice for what to do with those slow periods when business lulls, or if you have a seasonal service-based business or anything like that. There's a lot more information, ways to really leverage that time to prepare yourself for your next busy season. So I'll make sure that's linked up in the show notes for you to find if you want more advice in this area.
A brand new year. I'm not even sure how we got here so fast, but I am wildly grateful for another year with this podcast and, of course, with you. In this season of new beginnings, making a lasting impact on our businesses and customers is more important than ever. If you haven't already implemented a CRM platform into your business, well, now is the time. CRM, or customer relationship management, is at the heart of turning your side hustle into your success story and your customers into your fans. Reach your customers wherever, whenever, with ease, thanks to HubSpot's intuitive visual workflows and bot builders. You'll create scalable, automated marketing campaigns across email, social media, web, and customer chat so that your customers hear your messages loud and clear. A HubSpot CRM platform adapts your content for multiple device types so your customers have a great experience no matter where they're viewing it. Learn more about how you can transform your customer experience with a HubSpot CRM platform at HubSpot.com.
All right. So let's take a little turn here and let's talk about negative reviews. Reviews are, there's a love-hate relationship, right? We've talked about a lot, you know, how to really listen to feedback versus criticism. We've covered that a lot on Gold Digger. But that first negative review, when you feel like you are crushing the entrepreneur life, business is great, and all of the sudden someone comes in with their one star and their very loud negative voice, and it can get you down. So I'm not sure. Do you remember kind of like the first time someone said, I'm not a fan of Jenna Kutcher and I'm here to tell you all about it?
Yes, I absolutely do. It's bringing me back. I had this wedding that it was literally probably one of my first weddings ever. And the bride and groom were in a fight, like an actual fight. And he had gone golfing that morning and the whole schedule was just gone. And it was a very chaotic, frustrating day. There was probably a lot of lack of expectations set on my part. But I remember when I delivered the gallery, they were like, oh, like, where are all these beautiful portraits? And I was like, you guys wouldn't even stand next to each other. Like, how am I supposed to get these portraits? And so it was one of those things where it was like so circumstantial and so specific. However, it was like devastating because I was like, can I really do this? And like, am I supposed to be like a therapist as well as like a groom corraler, as well as like, you know, all of these roles? It's like, can I do this? And I was really worried because it was towards the beginning of my career. So I didn't have a ton of reviews. It wasn't like a one star out of 100, 5-star. It was like I had 5 reviews total. And it was just really frustrating because, you know, again, our first instinct is to get defensive. And I think that there are always two sides to every story. And, you know, her version of it was probably different than mine. And it was just really awkward because it was like, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to do. We can't go back to your wedding day. But I think one of the things that is so important, especially as a business owner, is that, like, again, like you said, we've talked so much about discerning between like feedback and just straight up criticism and understanding like, what can I do differently? What could I do better? And how can I remedy it? And I believe I ended up sending them back a portion of their payment because I was just like, you know, if you're unhappy, like, I don't want to, like, I want to do something. And it was one of those cases where I could have totally argued and just, you know, held on to every dollar. But to me, one of the things I've learned so much is like, whatever you need to do to protect your peace, like, if something is keeping you up at night or if something is, you know, consuming and bubbling over into your personal life, it's not generally worth it. And whatever you need to do to like release that into the universe and let it go is sometimes worth it. And so for me at that circumstance, it was worth it. I remember sending the emails to my mom and being like, "Mom, what do I do?" My mom's not an entrepreneur. She's a nursing instructor. So, but it was like one of those things where it was like, you're on your own and now you've got to make these decisions. And like, it is kind of scary. So I would just say if you get a negative review and it's public and you can respond to it, I highly, highly encourage you to respond to it very thoughtfully, carefully. Have somebody else read your response before you post it. Again, reiterate what their problem was so that you prove that you understand what the issue was. And then if there is further context that would help other people who might lean on that review or read that review, provide that context. And then I would also just provide an opportunity for that person to get back in touch with you to create a solution that feels good for both of you. But especially when it comes to public reviews and people can read them, I'm always impressed when the person handles it with grace and also handles it in a solution-based way. And I think that we all have the opportunity to do those things.
Yeah, that's good. I really like the way, so I was thinking about this, you know, we're working through some updates on some courses and where I would kind of be nervous about facing reviews head on. Someone asks for a refund for one reason or another. They provide feedback on why they want that refund. Like for me, I would want to just pretend that never happened, not look at it again, not read their words, because that would bring the anxiety up again. But instead,
we're like the opposite.
We have an entire document that has, you know, the feedback from people who have asked for refunds on courses or like have sent an email with a piece of criticism / feedback. And we use that to make our products, services better, to show up better. And I just love the way you address it head on and you aren't freaked out about it.
Oh, I love it. And I think too, it's really cool because like even when it comes to like our courses, every single week I check in with our customer service and like we have a less than 1% refund rate. It is so minuscule. But every single week I check in with Steph on our team and like, hey, are you noticing anything? Are there any trends? Is there anything that we can address? Can we do better? And like, while it does give me slight hives, most of the time I can see in those reviews that a lot of times it's circumstantial or super specific to that person. Right. And a lot of times we're able to remedy that just by offering a solution or an opportunity to connect or communicate. But I love how we handle that because it's a metric that we track. It's something that we're paying attention to, but it also is a guide of like, oh yeah, we can do better. And like doing better feels really freaking good. And so I love it. I love it and yeah. I hate it at the same time.
Yeah, it's like that good cringe when you look at
yes.
it. Okay, so jumping in as an entrepreneur, you are full-time responsible for yourself, mostly at the beginning. A solopreneur answers to themselves only. And so time management, when you don't have a time card that you're punching or an office you're showing up to, that can be a little bit freaky for people managing that time as your own boss. How did you approach your own time management at the beginning?
Terribly.
Well, honesty is the best policy. Oh.
Well, and I think here, you know, I was actually just reminded of this when writing the book because I was talking about the early days when I would work my, you know, regular job, which was 10 hours a day and usually a 1-hour commute on either side. And then I would come home and work on my side hustles. And my editor was like, what did Drew do during this? And I was like, honestly, like he was really supportive, but like we didn't know any different because we had just like gotten engaged. We were about to get married. It was just kind of like what our normal became. And I think it would have been harder if we had settled into married life and like had the normal, like, let's go to the pumpkin patch on Saturday or like, let's, you know, go to the farmer's market. But like, we never really had that. We were both kind of in retail positions and working just different types of jobs. And so I had really, really bad time management. And I think too, for a lot of people who have certain structure, certain schedules, you know, certain days of the week that they do certain things in a corporate setting or in any sort of setting, and then you go to endless free time, but that free time needs to be filled with priorities, it can be really hard. And I think one of the hardest things for me was the lack of feedback. I came from a very feedback-oriented company. Target was so on par with like consistent feedback, knowing how you're doing, performance indicators, all these things. And then all of a sudden you're like, no one's telling me I'm doing a good job. Am I doing a good job? Am I doing the right thing? Like, what does this look like? So I would say that the biggest thing that you need to do for time management is to go back to the boundaries thing. What do those boundaries look like? When are you committed to working? When are you committed to being online and available? When will you be unavailable? Things like autoresponders on your email can literally change everything. I think it really can help set expectations and can also get you off the hook where it says, you know, I check my email once a day, Monday through Friday, like things like that, where it can buy you time and make it so that you're not so connected. But then I also think too, if you are in a situation where you live with family or you have a partner or a spouse or a roommate or a friend, that you can kind of create your own life flow with them, whatever that looks like, and have that accountability. And like, for me, it's as simple as like leaving my computer in a different room and not having it just right there where I can just crack it open at the drop of a hat. Things like really checking in and auditing, like, where is my time going? Where am I getting distracted? Where am I getting pulled off course? What is that shiny object that keeps sucking me in? Instagram, things like that. And so really just looking at what that looks like. And I think too, a lot of us need structure. So how can you create your own structure that works with your flow state, but that also supports like moving the actual needle forward?
I had such a distorted sense of how long things took for the longest time. And I always blame this on my mom because when I was a kid, like even a teenager, I would ask her, how long does it take to get to this place? It was 20 minutes. She had me believing that it took 20 minutes to get everywhere in the state of Maine. And that was it. How long are we going to be here? 20 minutes. How much longer? 20 minutes. And so I just like, it's so funny, but that sort of informed my own time management as I got into adulthood and working work from home jobs. I really had a distorted sense of how long projects would take me. So I had to get honest with myself that I can't pull together a script for something in 20 minutes. It's actually going to take me probably 2 hours. So I think it's important to kind of analyze your own belief around time and how long your projects, how long your work actually takes, and planning for that, which sounds so silly. But if you had a mom who always told you 20 minutes, you might have this sense that it's not going to take you as much time as it actually
will. And then you're setting yourself up to finish the day feeling defeated, like you didn't get anything done. So I think we've gotten really good at that on our team of like realistic goal setting and also just flexibility on it. Like where it's like, if this feels like too much, just say the word. We literally said the other day, like, say the safe word and we'll jump out. Like if this is going to, you know, like let's set this goal and let's go for it. But if at any point it feels so urgent or stressful, somebody's going to call out the safe word and we're going to just pull out, and that's okay. And I think that it's really important to, like you said, have realistic expectations. And I think too, that's where like tools that we've talked about on the show, like batch working or, you know, establishing your big three, like what's going to move the needle. Those types of tools can actually help you finish your day feeling like, I got something done today. I got something accomplished. You don't need a boss to tell you that. That's where you know that like you're in charge and that you're using your time well.
Yes. So one overarching theme that we keep coming back to during this conversation is expectations. And I think expectations really come into play with this next challenging business scenario. And that is when you are finally ready or should be ready to delegate a task to someone else. There's a lot of expectation setting from both parties. How did you finally release your grip on pieces of your business and delegate it out to someone else?
Very reluctantly and very stubbornly. Yes. I feel like I'm very self-aware in a lot of these places of like, whoa, I was really wrong. Delegating is really interesting, especially at the beginning, because our businesses are our babies. And I can say that as a mom of two, our businesses are, you know, these things that we've literally like built from nothing. And so the thought and the notion that you are going to trust someone else with your baby. Like, I mean, let's be honest, Coco has never been babysat by like anyone other than my mother, and she's three. So I am not great at letting go of my baby and like trusting, you know. But what I think is so interesting in terms of expectations and what that looks like is at some point you cannot do it all. There's absolutely this threshold that a human being will hit. And a lot of times we keep pushing past it, which is where we hit burnout and frustration, where we just want to quit altogether. But I think that what happens is when we are self-aware enough to acknowledge that, yes, I can do that thing, but I shouldn't be doing it, or I'm not the best at doing it, it can absolutely tip the scale. For me, one of the first things that I ended up outsourcing that I swore I would never do was outsourcing editing of some of my images. And I was like, but I love editing and I can do it. And I was the one that shot that moment, so no one knows how it feels, and I want to make sure it's all perfect. And it was so interesting because I found a way where I got to edit my favorite 150 photos and then I outsourced the rest. And it was this beautiful, delicate balance of me still enjoying that aspect of my job without burning myself out on it and without this belief that like only I could do it. And I think that when you start to recognize that you are able to trade your money in order to get back your time, and you hit that threshold where your time is more valuable than money, that is where you can start to delegate. And when you start to delegate, you've got to leave room for human error. You've got to leave room for a learning curve, but it's also up to you to set expectations and to set someone up for success. And I think the way that you do that is by really walking someone through, here's how I've been doing this, but I want to give you the autonomy to figure out if there's a better way or if there's a different way or if there's something you want to try. And I'm going to trust you to do that. And I think that's really the secret sauce, is like handing over what your process is, but letting someone have the freedom to create their own process that probably will be better than what you were doing anyways. But delegating can be a challenge. Again, it's just expectations. And I think it's a lot of those like tipping points when you really recognize, like, I've got to loosen my grip. I've got to let someone else come in. I've got to trust someone to care for my baby. And I've got to kind of take a step back and let them have that ownership piece.
I think when I was preparing to delegate my first episode of my podcast, which is my baby, my fears were all of these scenarios I had in my head that, oh, my listeners aren't going to enjoy it as much. I'm going to get negative reviews because they're going to hear that I didn't write this episode completely by myself. And it was all of these imaginary scenarios that I dreamed up in my head as being a negative to delegating. But I released one episode with a co-writer and it came out and I didn't have a single negative review.
No one raised the flag
and said, oh my gosh, Kylie didn't write this all by herself. But what I did get was all the positives, where I had a full weekend to myself. I didn't have to work through the weekend to prepare this episode. I got to drink coffee watching HGTV and not have to think about the work that was to come. Like, it was only positives after I outsourced that first thing. And like, once you get comfortable with it, you like, it's amazing.
Take my money.
Here you go.
That's the thing too. Even with like writing a book, I told my mom when I started the book process, I was like, me and my mom read a lot. We read a ton and we share a Kindle library. So a lot of times we work through books together. And I was like, Mom, your assignment for the next year is to read the acknowledgments for every single book that we read. Because inside of the acknowledgments, you would never imagine all the people that play a role in a book. You just see the author's name on the front cover, right? Mm-hmm. And same thing with this podcast or with my blog or with anything. It's like, as long as we are serving people and it is true to our mission and our brand values, and it is because our team has and shares those values, people don't necessarily care about how they're getting the content. They want that authenticity. They want that alignment, but they just want to be served at the end of the day. And so I think it's so cool when you can start to look at places where there is a whole team effort coming through, and maybe there is one person who is the face or the voice or the brand. But when they can acknowledge that they get help, I think it also gives us permission to get help. And I think that that is like the most beautiful invitation we can give people.
Yes. Okay. I love that. Now I want to outsource more things, more delegating. All right, let's close it out on a tricky one. I know you are no stranger to this, nor am I, but one thing that can be so frustrating in business is looking at competition. Specifically, you know, maybe copycats pop up. Maybe someone is doing exactly what you're doing 5 steps behind you, and you know they're following in your footsteps. And that can be so irritating when you feel like you've come up with this business idea that you believe in, and suddenly there's the competition trying to steal some of it away from you. So how are you approaching competition these days? How does that look differently from how you felt about it in the past?
Yeah. This brings me back to one story that I'll share really quickly. When I first started shifting into education, which was about 3 years into wedding photography, I was doing one-on-one mentor sessions, and you could do them over Skype or you could come to my apartment where we lived. And a local photographer had signed up for like an hour-long session. And looking back, it was totally not worth like what I was getting paid for what I was giving. And in that session, I like handed over the keys to the kingdom. I like gave her my pricing guide, and here's how I do my emails, and here's how I walk through this. Here are my templates. And I think it was almost an entire year later, I found out that she had literally just taken everything word for word and just changed out her name and changed out the photos. And a customer actually figured it out because she had inquired to both of us and got sent back the same pricing guide.
Oh, wow.
And the same email. And she flagged, like, she was like, Jenna, I think this girl is like ripping you off. And I was so bummed because I was like, here, like, I handed all this over to you, you know, as a favor to like teach you, to show you. And like, you literally word for word did this. And you also undercut my prices significantly. Mm-hmm. And I was devastated. And I remember Drew and I were on a trip to Chicago. Like, it was supposed to be like a really fun weekend. And all of this just consumed me. Like, I was so angry. I was frustrated. I wanted to like talk to a lawyer. It just like broke my spirit, especially in the transparency of like wanting to mentor someone and then having that turnaround. And that incident really held me back from education and this desire to share anything about my behind the scenes, because I was like, people are just going to use it and it's just going to blow up in my face again. And it's impacting my business. And it was just really icky. And I think that things like that naturally happen to, one, teach us lessons. Bummer. I freaking hate learning lessons, but dang it, they make us better. But also, two, to kind of help us set up those boundaries and those expectations and all the things that we've spoken about on the show. And I think too, with competition, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about this lack of confidence. When we see competition and when we obsess over it, when we let it really like take away our peace, it's usually due to a lack of confidence in what we're putting out there. And there are absolutely scenarios and situations where you might need legal counsel, or you might need to go that next step, or you might need to send that email to say, hey, I'm noticing that, you know, this looks very similar to mine. But there are also circumstances where you've got to just let it go and you've got to put your head down and the blinders on and do the work. And so I think that discernment can be really tricky. And we have an episode, Kylie, about what to do when somebody's copied you. And that walks you through the different scenarios of how to navigate what to do and how to really process through those different situations, because they will come up as a part of being a business owner. And so with competition and being copied, I think that at the end of the day, you don't want to encounter things in your business that make you lose sleep. Can you tell that I'm in a stage of life where sleep is literally the most important part of my life? And so if you are losing sleep, it's a good sign that you've got to just make a decision on how you're going to move forward and how you're going to release it, whatever that looks like.
Well, this has been probably one of this is a great way to start 2022, I think, with a Kylie and Jenna episode. It's so juicy. Everything we just went over, I think, is a great way to get prepared for any possible challenging scenario that comes up in the next year as an entrepreneur. From what to do when you let down a customer or client, setting work boundaries, dealing with negative reviews, delegating tasks to someone else. We covered it all. And I'll make sure all of the follow-up resources for more listening, more learning in these areas are all linked in the show notes.
Awesome. Kylie, thanks for walking through life's challenges with me.
Always.
Thank you for this amazing conversation. I really hope it encourages our listeners to know that they're not alone if they're experiencing a challenge, but also to know that those challenges are those things like when you're in them, you're like, I'm never going to live this down. I'm never going to forget this. And you will be able to laugh about them or share them maybe a decade from now on a podcast just like this. But those are some of the greatest lessons you will learn, and you will navigate them with grace because I know who you are as a listener. And I'm just excited to walk through this new year with you. So, Kylie, what do we say when we sign off?
Until next time, keep on digging your biggest goals.
I'm over here giving you a virtual high five because you just finished another episode of the Goal Digger podcast. Did that go by way too fast for anyone else? If you want more, head over to golddiggerpodcast.com for show notes and all the discount codes from today's sponsors. And if you're looking for a new crew of movers and shakers like you to bounce ideas and ask questions, be sure to join my exclusive community for Gold Diggers on Facebook. The link's waiting for you at golddiggerpodcast.com.